we learned yesterday the Mishnah at the beginning of the new Perek, Samachlalo and Aleph, and now we'll start on the Gemara. So to recap, the Mishnah talked about the Mishnah talked about two major cases. One is where a woman is possible to marry a Kohen, she's a Grusha or Chalutza or what have you. We said there's a difference then between two different kinds of avodim that she brings into the marriage, whether they can eat truma, nichset tzayin barzel, which are still nichset tzayin barzel, where effectively the husband owns them, although we're talking the Gemara about the details, but he just owes her the value of them when the marriage is over, when he dies or divorces her. Those are considered his avodim, and therefore they can eat truma. Whereas the ones who are malug, where basically they belong to her, he just has the right to the peiros, for example, to their work. They cannot eat truma because she herself is not supposed to, for reasons that we'll talk about in the Gemara. Then we have the second case was that the second and third cases were a regular case where Bas Yisrael marries a Kohen, or vice versa, where Bas Kohen marries Yisrael, where in the second case any kind of avodim can eat truma, and in the third case any of them cannot. So the Gemara asks, "V'avdim malug lo yoichlo b'truma? Why are you telling me that these slaves who are nichsim malug?" Again, that's basically they belong to the wife, just the husband has the right to the payers. Why should they not be allowed to eat truma? Am I? Why is that? Lehevi kinyon ish a kona kinyon. Why don't we consider it the same way as we would consider if a kohen's kinyon, for example, his eved, buys another eved of his own, and then that second level eved is also allowed to eat truma. Now, how does it happen that an eved can buy a vadim? Usually we say mashakona eved kona ravoi. Both Rashi and Tosfos talk about, for example, you can have a case, somebody gave the Eved money, this is given to you on condition that your owner doesn't have any control over this money. So then it's the Eved's personal property. He could use it to buy his freedom if he wanted. In this case, he used it to buy an Eved of his own. And, D'tanya, we learn it, so the same way over here. Even if you're going to say, fine, this woman is possible to marry a Kohen, the fact is he did marry her. The marriage is Tofus min HaTorah. It's an Isur Lav, but it's still Tofus. So why don't we consider that Avnei Malug are considered like the Kohen's Kinyan, the Kohen's Kinyan, his wife, who bought another Kinyan slave. D'tanya, minayim l'Kohen shenasa isha v'kana avadim sheyech l'betruma. How b'chlal do we know that if a Kohen marries a woman or buys slaves, that they're allowed to eat truma? Shenema, v'Kohen k'yikne nefesh kinyan kaswa. If a Kohen buys a person who was bought with his money, hu yochal bai, then that person, the slave, for example, is allowed to eat truma. Uminayin l'isha shekonsa avadim v'avadim shekonu avadim. And then how do we know if the woman herself, the wife herself, bought slaves, or his slaves bought slaves? Again, the pasuk says a kohen who buys a soul, a person who's bought with his money, who yochal bai, such a person can eat with it. So the extra word kinyan kaspoi, we don't need that. Obviously, if he bought it, it was bought with his money. It means to teach us kinyan shekanya kinyan oichal. It means even that somebody who the Kohen himself bought, an Eved or a wife, and then that person themselves bought a Kinyan, another slave, that second-level slave also can eat. And the Braita finishes off, Kol Ha'Eichel Machil, the general rule is anybody who themselves is allowed to eat Truma is able to make their slaves eat Truma. So in this case, the wife herself is allowed to eat Truma, so the slaves can also. Kol She'en Eichel Eichel Machil, whereas if she can't eat Truma, or if the Eved himself can't eat Truma, then neither can his Avadim. Which, before we get back to the question of why we don't say that the Avdim Malug fall into that category, first the Gemara asks on that rule that we just said, Beloy, you're telling me not? I can find you an exception. I can find you a case where somebody themselves is not allowed to eat Truma, but their Avadim are. You have a Kohen who's an Oral, which we'll talk about at the beginning of the next parak. And any Kohen who's Tame, they themselves can't eat Truma, you have to be Tahar to eat Truma, but their slaves can. The answer is Hosam Pumayu Koivlohu. That's different. That's like, so to speak, Pumayu Koivlohu literally means their mouths hurt. In other words, like, in theory, they would be able, there is something they could do to make themselves able to eat Truma. They could get a Bris Mila. Okay, even if we're talking Mesuach of Machas Mila, in principle, you know, a Bris could be done. He can't because he's too physically weak to, but there's nothing in Halacha that prevents it from happening. It's just, like, a person can't eat because his mouth hurts. Doesn't prevent a slave from eating Truma. It's a side issue. Same thing with being Tomei.
The before he was 28 years old.
No, when we say an oral, we mean after 8 days. If he's under 8 days old and he already owns a vodim, how would that be his father died before he was 8 days old? Then Bepashtus, he's not considered an oral for that purpose, Bepashtus. Right. Yeah. We'll talk about it in the next parak. I think there'll be a discussion about that. Anyway, Omer Ravina. So Ravina says, really what the Braisa means is like this. It's not saying that anybody who's able to eat is able to make their slaves eat, etc. Rather, kinyan oichol ka'amar. What the Braisa really means is any case of a kinyan that is able to eat. Kinyan oichol ka'amar. Kinyan oichol machil. Somebody who's bought by somebody who's able to eat truma is themselves allowed to make somebody else eat truma. Their own slave. She'ein oichol eine machil. Whereas somebody who cannot allow their slaves to eat truma. In this case, you're asking why don't we consider the slaves of the nixim lug of this woman who's possible to marry a kohen? Why don't we consider them kinyana, and they should be allowed to? The answer is because she herself is not allowed to eat. She herself is not allowed to eat truma because she's possible to marry this kohen. As a matter of fact, once he had relations with her, she becomes a halala or a zoina according to the different opinions. So. Well, there's that too, right? As long as they're married, he has a mitzvah to divorce her. We'll talk about that soon, actually. But only the kind of kinyan that makes a person able to eat truma is able to make them be machil to somebody else. That's one answer. Rava says no. As a matter of fact, midaraisa, these slaves, these abdi malug, would be able to eat truma. V'rabbanan, who de gazir, who it's rather that Rabbanan made a gzera that they shouldn't. Kadesha Taimar, in order, let the woman herself start thinking. Kadesha Taimar, ani eini echelus. Look, I can't eat myself, and avoda ein an oichlin, and even my slaves can't eat, which means it's like I have no full-fledged relationship with my husband. Zayna, yes, like effectively I'm like a zayna to my husband. Hukach atula puka, and that way it'll give her and him the idea that, you know what, we should get divorced. What am I doing over here? As opposed to Mela, if she herself couldn't eat, but her slaves could, she herself would say, okay, I'm a halala, that's different, but you see, I have enough power as the wife of a kohen to be machu my slave. The fact that she doesn't even have that will make her reevaluate the kind of marriage that she has and want out. Exactly. And it has an effect on the family budget too. Truma is cheaper than cholin because of the fact that truma can only be eaten by kohenim and it can only be eaten by tara, and there was various other rules on it. Therefore, typically truma is if you're buying truma, you can buy it cheaper than you would an equivalent amount of cholin. Rav Ashi Yomar, a third reason. Gzeira shematachil la'achamisa. There's a different reason why you would say these abdi malug cannot eat. It's true, midaraisa, again, they would be able to. The problem is, what happens if she continues giving them truma after her husband dies? Then for sure they're not allowed to. At that point, she goes back to being a Bat Yisrael. She herself is not allowed to eat truma anymore, and neither are her slaves. Give it to her, yeah. Question is, if you're going to say that, El Me'ata, so by that law, Bat Yisrael, Shenisah, Sakayim, like Hachil, so what are you going to say then? A regular case of a Bat Yisrael, not a Gurusha. A kosher of Bat Yisrael who marries a kohen. Are you going to say also she shouldn't be allowed to feed her slaves truma gzeder shematacha lachamisa because she might continue to do it after her husband dies? And we know that not. The Mishnah clearly said that the Avdei Malug and the Avdei Tzoyin Barzol, if she was allowed to marry her husband, are allowed to eat truma. Tosfos asks the question, I mean, what exactly is she going to think? Shouldn't it be obvious to her that there's a difference? There shouldn't be obvious to her that there's a difference between whether my husband is alive or dead. So Tosfos says the vort is rather that the concern is she herself finds, she knows for herself that she has to stop eating truma when her husband dies. She may not realize that same kind of thing as far as her slaves. So because of that, therefore we're going to make that gzera. So in other words, there's a difference. Therefore, so when it comes to a regular Bat Yisrael, what we're saying is we're not worried about that. She herself was eating truma, Now, when her husband dies, she has to stop eating truma automatically. Therefore, she's going to know that she also has to stop feeding her slave truma, and therefore, there's no reason to be goyzer. Mashenkin, if she's a grusha or what have you. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. She has no children, right? If she has children from the kohen, she's allowed to continue eating anyway on their basis. We'll start talking about that in the next mishnah.
The husband dies and she
stops eating truma. So that's the thing. If she's a regular bas yisrael, not a grusha or halala or whatever, then she knows the moment her husband dies, she has to stop, and therefore she'll automatically know her slaves have to stop too. Mashenkin, if she was a grusha to begin with, where she all along was not eating truma because she's not allowed to, she's a halala.
Yeah.
But all this time her slaves were eating, it's not going to be so obvious to her, you know what, my husband dies and they have to stop. And therefore, Rav Ashi's saying we're going to make a gzera. Ella Omer Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says you're right. You still might confuse those two cases. The reason, the difference is, Va'amona Kehenes. You're talking about over here that the woman herself is a Bas Kohen. It's not, before we were assuming she's a Bas Yisrael who married a Kohen, so she first came to eating Truma when she married her husband, or in the case of a Grusha, she never came to eating Truma, only her slaves did. In this case, she was a Bas Kohen to begin with, so she was allowed to eat Truma from her father's house, Truma Beis Avia, Truma de Beit Nasha, as we called it before, beforehand. So to ask you, she's likely, if we allow her slaves, her Nichsim Lug slaves, to eat Truma, even though she's a Grusha and shouldn't have married her husband, if we're going to allow her, she may come to make herself a heter. She'll think, me'ikra achli b'truma de b'nasha. Originally, I was allowed to eat truma from my father's house. In sebe le'lahai achli b'truma de gavaroi. Then I got married to this guy, and now I'm allowed to eat truma based on my husband. V'hashta hadri le'milse kamaita. Now, let me go back to my original status. I was allowed to eat truma originally from my father's truma. Now, also I and my slaves should be allowed to. V'lo yoda, and she doesn't realize, me'ikra le shavisa l'nafshe chalala. The difference is, before she was not a chalala. Now she made herself a halala because by being a grusha and marrying a kohen, she made herself a halala. The first time they have relations, she becomes a halala, and therefore she's never allowed to go back to Truma de Bein Asha. But she won't realize that. So therefore, based on that, then we want to say. Prevent her and her avodim from eating Truma even while she's married. She herself is also true anyway, because she's halala, but we want to prevent her slaves from eating truma at that point, her nixim log slaves, in order that she doesn't make that mistake. Question is, tena chamona kehenes. Okay, well, that works out very well if, in fact, she's a bas kohen. Amona bas yisrael, ma'ikol meimer. What are you going to say if she's a bas yisrael? She's not going to make herself a heter like that. She never grew up eating truma. Why would she think after her husband dies that her slaves can continue eating? The answer is because once she's a widow, we're not going to make distinctions like that. It's one of these loy plug things. Once the Chachamim had reason, according to Rav Ashi, to make a gzera that a bas kohen who's a grusha should not be, that neither she nor her nixim lug slaves should be able to eat truma as long as her husband is alive, because she might continue doing it after he's dead. Once we made that rule because of a bas kohen, because she may mix it up with the truma from her father's house, then already we're going to extend it to a bas yisrael, even though the same logic doesn't apply. Because like, look, we don't want to start drawing distinctions over there that are going to be confusing, and people are going to end up making mistakes. And we have to remember, by the way, that a zor eating truma, which in this case either she or her avadim or both of them would be considered zorim, is serious business. It's chayv misa b'dei shemayim.
It's only a lav.
He's Chayv Malkus, but yeah. Yeah. It makes him in her halala as well, right? So it passes her from eating Truma de Bein Asha if she's a Bas Kohen, but yeah. Itmar. So now the Gemara has a now the Gemara is going to get into a discussion like this. So far, we said in the Mishnah that there's a difference. We said there's a difference between the Avdei Melug and the Avdei Tzon Barzel. Again, what we're going to focus on now is going to be the Tzon Barzel one. Till now, we were focusing on the Malug one. Now, we're going to start focusing on the Tzon Barzel one, taking it a little bit of a different direction. We said the Tzon Barzel ones are like this. Tzon Barzel and the Chosim, we said, are the woman brings these Nechosim into the marriage. They write them into the Ksuba. That, for example, this Evet is worth $100. This blanket is worth $50, whatever it is. It's all written in the Ksuba. And the husband pledges on himself like this. He says, we have this in our Ksubas nowadays, that the Hoytzeflei Medilei, or Masayim, whatever. We say in the Ksuba, the following is the Nidunya that she brought in. That's Nichset Sein Barzel. The husband basically takes control of that stuff, but he pledges to his wife in the Ksuba that in case I die before you, or in case I divorce you, I'm going to owe you, I owe you the amount that these things are worth as of right now, as of when we get married. So therefore, we said in the Mishnah, the Sein Barzel is, if sometime during that period the slave dies or depreciates, and now he's only worth $50 or $0 because he's dead, tough luck. The husband is still on the hook for the 100. Conversely, if now he gets better, he develops a new talent or something, or you know, now he's worth 500, he still only owes her 100. But what we're saying is, it sounds like he himself keeps the actual eved or the actual property itself. He just owes her the value. That's what the Gemara is going to take up now. A woman who brings into the marriage a shum, meaning something that was the value of it was appraised and it was written into the ksuba. What happens now? She's coming to collect her ksuba after she gets divorced. She says, I want the actual kalim that I brought in. Not the value of them, I want the actual kalim itself. And he says, no, I get to keep the kalim, I just have to pay you the value of it. Hadinim me. Which one is right? Does she get the keli or does he? Or can he keep it? So machlekes. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Hadin Ima. Rabbi Ami Amar Hadin Ima. So Rabbi Yehuda says that she has the right. She can get back her keli. Rabbi Ami says that no, the Hadin Ima, he has the valid claim. He can keep the keli and just pay her the value.
If our mother did the value change, it went up or down.
It doesn't matter really. Either way, he owes. We are talking about that the value stayed the same, or we're talking about if it's the case. For example, the Gemara will talk about later. For example, that let's say there were two kalim. Each one was worth 100.
Yeah.
Each one was worth 100. Right now, now at the end, when. Fine, okay.
Second one, right?
Yeah. No, so you're going to have a case later, for example, where we had two kalim originally, each one worth 1,000, as the Gemara's example at the top of Samach Zayin. Now each of them is worth 2,000, so she takes one because altogether she was owed 2,000, and the other one, if she wants to buy it off him, she can do that. But so here, to keep things simple, let's say it's talking about that the kalim are still worth the same amount. That's a later case the Gemara is going to talk about. But for right now, to keep things simple, we're talking about the kalim are worth the same amount. She brought in a kalim worth 1,000, it's still worth 1,000. She wants the actual kalim back, he wants to keep the kalim and just give her the value. Who's right? So we're saying it's a machlokes. Rav Yehuda Amar Din Ima, so Rav Yehuda says she has a valid claim, and we listen to her Mishum Shvach Beis Aviyah because of the advantage, the praise of her father's house. This is a keli that she got from her father. This is part of the nadin that her father gave her to bring into the marriage. She wants that keli to stay in the family. It'll be an honorable thing for the family that it stays in the family. Eventually, if she gets remarried, she'll want to use it again in her next marriage. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says that she's right, she gets to keep it. Rabbi Ami Amar Dinimo, because Kivin de Amar, if Mesu Mesu Loi, be Mesu Resu Loi, because look in our Mishnah, we said about the Avadim. What's the definition of Nichset Sein Barzel? We said is that if the Eved, that if the Eved dies, then it's on his account, he still owes her the money, and if they appreciate in value, if they become worth more, then also he gets to keep that. So what do we see? We see, in other words, that he's chayev to regardless of anything that happens to them. And we say they're allowed to eat, the Mishnah said they're allowed to eat truma. If they're allowed to eat truma, implies they're his. Otherwise, if they were hers and he has to return them at the end of the marriage, how could they eat truma in the first case of the Mishnah where she's an amon l'kohen gadol, etc. It has to be that they actually belong to him. However, the Gemara asks, Omer Rab Safra Mikatoni Behen Shaloi? Why? The Mishnah doesn't actually say that the slaves are his. The Mishnah says, Hoyo Bechayev Bach Ryosin Katoni. The Mishnah just says he's responsible for anything that happens to them. Whatever it is, he has to make good on the value. Ula Olam La Bidein, you know. You could, after all, argue that the slaves are not really considered his. It's only the chayev bachri yosan. So maybe, yes, maybe we could say that that's enough, that on that basis they're considered his enough that therefore they can eat truma. But maybe not at, to the extent that we're going to say that he can't return them to her at the end of the marriage. But the Gemara asks back, honor of Safra, v'chol heicha d'chayev bachri yosan achle b'truma. So you're telling me any case where a person is responsible for whatever happens to something that he bought, not bought, borrowed, whatever, that you're saying that thing can eat truma? Well, it's not, which is effectively what we're saying so far. We're saying because he's chayev bachri yosan of these slaves, of these nichset son bars of slaves, therefore we're saying that would be enough to eat truma. But we learn in a Mishnah, in Trumas, Yisrael shesacha parah mikayin, if Yisrael rents a cow from a kayin to do work in the field, harezi yachalena kashine truma, he's allowed to feed it kashinim of truma. Kashinim are a type of beans. Tosfos points out these beans, the people are capable of eating them, therefore they're chayiv in truma. On the other hand, usually they're fed to animals, therefore they're allowed to feed them to animals. So in this case, because the animal belongs to the kayin, he's allowed to feed it truma. On the other hand, Kohen Shesacha Parah Yisrael, if it's the other way around, a Kohen rents a cow from Yisrael, Ach Pishim is a Neseh Olav, even though the Kohen is responsible for feeding the animal.
He's got a chayes on it.
Lo Yachal on a cow. Well, the Gemara is going to contradict that in a second, but right now the Gemara is assuming that, yeah, he has full of chayes. Lo Yachal on a cow shini truma. Then he's not allowed to feed it beans of truma, because the fact of the matter is it doesn't belong to him. Let's just have a bit of a discussion over here. What exactly the issue would be? You're allowed to have your Yisrael is allowed to have hana from truma. We learned in Eruvin, for example, that a Yisrael can use truma for his Eruv Tumin or whatever. But on the other hand, you can't use it in a way that's going to end up being destroyed. Which in this case, the animal is going to eat it. Also, Rashi and Tosfos discuss in other places, and this Gemara has also brought in Avodah Zarah, what kind of truma are we saying that the Yisrael would be allowed to feed it? Is it truma that he separated now and hasn't designated it for any particular kohen yet? Or is it even that the kohen can give him truma to feed the animal, whatever? So therefore, you see, on the face of it, even though he's chayav bachrayus of the animal, nevertheless, he can't feed it. Nevertheless, he can't feed it truma. Back to Tispera. So how could you think? What's the point of comparison? We're talking about a soicher over here. What's the basic rule of a soicher? Well, the Gemara actually has a machlokas about it in Bava Metzia. What the level of liability of a soicher is? The Torah spells out for a shem achinam, for a shem asacher, and for a shoyel. It doesn't explicitly spell out for a soicher. So in fact, it's a machlokas tanoim over there. Whether a soicher is basically like a shem achinam, he's only responsible if he was negligent. Or is he more like a shem asacher, where he's also responsible if the animal was lost or was lost or stolen? Okay, but even fine. Even if we go according to the opinion, which is the halacha, that he's chayiv if the animal is lost or stolen, we don't find he's not chayiv in the oinsim. Only a shoyel is chayiv in that. He's not chayiv if the animal becomes leaner, and over nifchas demer, or for any other reason it depreciated. So we see he doesn't have total achrayas. So we see, in other words, it's different than the case of the slaves in our Mishnah. The nichset in Basel of our Mishnah, the husband is always on the hook for the $100 per a piece, regardless of what happens to them. Here, in the case of the seicher, of course the kohen can't feed the animal truma. He's not fully responsible for it. You can't say chayev bachri yosa to the same extent as the husband in our Mishnah. Rather, if you're going to compare the case of our Mishnah to anything, and in that case, the Kohen and the Yisrael, you have to compare it to the end of that same Mishnah, which the Mishnah continues. Yisrael shesham parah mikohen, that if Yisrael gets a cow from a Kohen where they did a shuma, they appraised its value. And the deal is that it's a kind of rental, but they made a deal that he's responsible for everything, regardless of what happens. It's always Hashem. We appraise the value. I owe you that value at the end. And if it turns out that at the end of it the cow is dead or depreciated or whatever, then I'll make up the difference. Even in Eitzin. Lo yachalena kashinim truma. So we're saying then he's not allowed to feed it kashinim of truma, because at that point it's under his achrayus, so effectively it's considered his. of a kohen to shom parim Yisrael. But if it was the other way around, if the kohen rented the cow under such an arrangement from a Yisrael, yachalena kashinim truma, then Yisrael defeated the kashinim of truma because we see there he has full achrayus. So therefore, that is exactly the same as our Mishnah. Tosfos, by the way, disagrees with Rashi about exactly what they did over here with the Shruma, because Tosfos argues you have an issue of ribis over here. If you're renting the cow and you're promising to be responsible for anything that happens, plus of course you're paying a rental fee, effectively it's a kind of ribis. It's called a vach ribis. The Gemara has a long discussion about this kind of thing in Bava Metzia. So Tosfos says we're not talking about rental, rather we're talking about borrowing. Other Mefarshim explain the difference. The difference is that there is a way to find for Rashi that there is a difference between hello. There is a difference between this and a situation of ribis. Oh, that's what it is. Because in this case over here, there is one thing that he is potter for, and that is mesa machmas malacha. If the animal dies in the normal course of work, then he is potter. So he's not like it's not like the case of ribis over there in Bava Metzia where no matter what happens, he has to pay. Here there is one loophole, there is one out that he has. And therefore, it can't be considered. Therefore, not necessarily would it be considered a problem of ribis. Hey, I told them last night we were going to do that. Okay. Okay. So the bottom line is that we haven't really found a way to prove that our Mishnah supports Rav Ami's position that the slaves belong to him. We said, yes, he's chayav achri yosan. Yes, that's enough to make them be able to eat truma, just like in that case of the Yisrael and the Kohen in the second half of that Mishnah in Trumas. We did not prove that he owns them to the extent that he's allowed to keep them at the end of the marriage. So where taka does Rav Ami get it from? So there's an interesting thing. They bring in the notes, in the notes in the Art School Gemara, they bring from a Baruch Ber Leibowitz, who gives an explanation like this. The difference is, he says, in the case of when you're doing this hasham para, when you're doing this rental or borrowing with full responsibility, the difference is it has the term is going to end eventually. Eventually, the guy is supposed to get back his animal, as opposed to a marriage has no fixed term. So therefore, there's more of a logical reason. Rav Ami would argue to assume that in the case of a marriage, yes, if he has full achrayus on it, and there's not necessarily going to be a time when there's not necessarily a fixed time when the deal is over and he returns them to her. So therefore, it's more logical to assume that it's meant to be a permanent thing. Yep. That's meant to be a permanent thing that he gets to keep them. No, of course not. But they might outlast the marriage. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Or conversely, the marriage might outlast them. We never know. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Yosef Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef b'shilei pirkei de Rabbi Nachman. One time, Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef were sitting at the end of Rabbi Nachman's shir, the Yastvi v'kamri, and they sat and they said as follows. You know, we have this machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Ami. What happens with these nichse? What happens with these tzoin barzel things at the end of the marriage? As a matter of fact, they said Tanya kavaseh de Rabbi Yehuda, but Tanya kavaseh de Rabbi Ami. As a matter of fact, we have one braisa that says like Rabbi Yehuda and one braisa that says like Rabbi Ami. So it seems to be a machlokes tanoim. Tanya kavasei de Rav Ami, because we have a braita that goes as follows. Avdei tzon barzel yotzen b'shein v'ayin l'ish, aval lo l'isha. We said these tzon barzel avodim. Now, the Torah says that if a person knocks out his Eved Kanani's eye or tooth or any one of 24 other important body parts, then the slave goes free automatically. But it has to be the owner who did that. So therefore, these tzon barzel, if the husband knocked out the eye or the tooth, then the slave gets to go free, because he's effectively their owner. Mashenkin, if the woman did, then no, because she's not considered the owner. So therefore we see that, the Kohen to Rabbi Ami, that the husband really is considered the owner. Therefore, when he dies or divorces her, he or his estate has the right to keep him. Tanya Kavaseh de Rabbi Yehuda, then we have another braisa like Rabbi Yehuda, HaMachneses Shum L'Baila, a woman who brings in a shum, again, who brings in Nichsetza and Barzal for her husband into the marriage, Imrotza HaBaal Limker Lo Yimker, even if the husband wants to sell any of these things, he's not allowed to sell them, presumably because she has the right to get him back at the end of the marriage. V'loy Oid, and not only that, El Afila Hichnis Lo Shum Mishaloy, even if he brought in his own shum into the marriage, Which, what kind of shulma are we talking about? There's a few different explanations that Mefoshim give. One is that we're talking about the one is that we're talking about that he made it he designated this particular thing. This will be what you get paid your ksuba out of. It's called in Gemara terminology an apotiki, sort of like a mortgage. Like I've mortgaged this particular piece of property, this particular bit of land, or this particular keli or whatever it is. This is the vehicle by which you're going to be repaid. By which you're going to be paid your ksuba. That's one explanation. Another explanation is we're talking about Tosfos Ksuba, where we know that the basic amount of the Ksuba is 200 for a Psula, 100 for an Almana or Grusha or what have you. If the husband wants to add more, he can add more. He can add, however, he can add $1 million if he wants. According to one explanation, the Shum that we're talking about over here is that, the Tosfos Ksuba. Anyway, so even if it started out as his own, but he's making it that it's available to her as mortgage to the ksuba or toast to the ksuba or whatever. Therefore, if the husband wants to sell that, he also can't sell it because she has certain rights over it. And continues the b'raisa, what happens if both of them sold it for panasa, which doesn't have to be dafka for panasa. So what do we mean, both of them? Rashi says, oizeh, oizeh. If one or the other of them sells it, Leparnasa, and Rashi says, doesn't necessarily mean they sold it for Parnasa. The same rule would be if they sold it for any purpose. But normally, why would you sell such a thing? Would only be if you're desperate for funds. Well, Zeha Yemaisi Lefnei Rav Shimon Gamliel. So such a case was brought to Rav Shimon Gamliel. Amar HaBaal Motzi Miyad HaLakuchos. And he said the husband has the right to take away the property from the people who bought it. Meaning, if his wife sold it, he's allowed to protest against it. She had no right to sell it without my consent. And they will take it away from them, and we pay them the money. Rashi talks about the whether we're talking about while she's still alive, or whether we're talking about Dafka after she died, or he divorced her. This by the way, that we said, Mochu Shneim Leparnasa, by the way, other Mefarshim say, it means literally even if both of them sold. It could happen, for example, that the wife takes these Nichset Son Barzol and sells them to somebody. Or sorry, the other way around. The husband goes and sells them to somebody. And then afterwards, the wife goes to the same person who bought it and says, you know what, I'm agreeing to that sale also. Nevertheless, there is a concept in halacha called that she can afterwards protest, and she can say, you know what, I didn't really want to sell it. Nachas ruach hafisi labayli. I only did it because since my husband sold it, I didn't want to cause friction between us. I didn't want to go against him. But I didn't really want to sell it. And then she has the right to take it back. Anyway, the point is that the Braisa is clearly saying that this shum, this tzoin barzel that she brought in, the husband is not allowed to sell unilaterally. Why? Because she's entitled to it back eventually. So therefore, we have two Braisas that one according to Rav Ami, one according to Rav Yehuda. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, halacha k'Rav Yehuda. So Rava says in the end, yeah, the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. So that's what Rav Nachman said, but then Amalei Rava Rav Nachman, V'al Tanya Kavasei Rav Ami, what epithet are you passing like Rav Yehuda? You do have a braisa like Rav Ami. It doesn't necessarily mean the halacha should be like Rav Ami either, but at least maybe you should leave. It's still an open question. Why are you coming down and that's the same that Rav Yehuda? The answer is because he said, Afagab Tanya Kavasei Rav Ami, it's true, we do have a braisa that agrees with Rav Ami. Nevertheless, we stab at a time in Rav Yehuda Mishum Shvach Vesaviyah. It is logical to follow Rav Yehuda's reasoning. It is that Shvach Vesaviyah is an important point. Yes, Rav Ami has a braisa to support him. Maybe even we could support him from our Mishnah, but Rav Yehuda's reasoning about Shvach Vesaviyah is an important factor that we should consider, and therefore we should pass him like him. Shvach Vesaviyah basically means she brought this property in from her father's house. This originally belonged to her parents. They gave it to her as part of her nadin. It would be it's praiseworthy. It's like, you know, it makes their family look better when this thing remains in the family rather than staying with her ex-husband. Rav Ami says that since based on our Mishnah, Rav Ami had wanted to say that since we say that the husband can feed the tzoin barzel slaves truma even if his wife is partial to him, means therefore he really owns them. So very nice, but Shvach Vesaviyah is a more important point. So Mark continues with a case. Yeah, because still it's the family. It's the family Shvach, not necessarily her father. It's a Shvach for her as well. She herself can use it in her next marriage. So Mark tells, Hahi itza da'ayla le legavra itzla de milsa b'ksubasa. There was a woman who, as part of her nadin, as part of what she brought into the marriage, she brought in a cloak made out of fine wool. Milsa can mean fine wool, or it might also mean silk, whatever it was. It was a fancy garment. shachiv, then her husband passed away. Shaklu yasmi parsu amisna. The Yisraelim took this garment and spread it out over him to make tachrichim for him out of it. And tachrichim are really supposed to be made out of cheap material, but in this case, maybe they didn't know, whatever, maybe they, you know, it was his favorite coat, they figured he should be buried with it, who knows. Now, the din is that tachrichim are also ba'ana. So what happens? Amar Rava, kanya misna. So Rava says, yes, in that case, the mess has been koina this garment, even though the woman brought it in as nifsit son ba'arlo, nevertheless, that's it. It's out of her hands now. It gets buried with the mess.
Cannot take
it
back.
Nanai, breder of Yosef, breder of Lelakana. Nanai, who's now Rava's grandson, and the son of his son of Yosef, asked of Kahana, what do you mean? We said before that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that the woman is entitled to get back the actual nichset zayin barzel. The husband doesn't have the option of saying, I want to keep this and I'll pay you the value of it. So why over here? I mean, the husband's dead, but it still seems to amount to the same thing. Why should we allow the yoshim, why should we allow the heirs of the husband to take it away and use it as one of his tachrichim?
Somebody takes your property and uses it as
tachrichim. No, a person cannot ask for something that doesn't belong to him. So if I were to take your coat and use it as tachrichim, that wouldn't make it aser. In this case, that's the argument. On the face of it, according to Rabbi Yehuda, and we just said the halacha of Rabbi Yehuda, this cloak does not belong to him, it belongs to her. The out of the yoshim have the right to take it and use it for tachrichim and make it aser to her. You take it off. You before you bury the mess, you take off the tachrichim and whatever. We didn't say they buried the man yet. They just said, "O parsu amisna." They spread it out as him over him as tachrichim. Yeah. The answer is amalei. Rav Kahana answers him, "True, but milai murdered Rav Yehuda de mechusu guvaina." Still, even Rav Yehuda has to agree that yes, she is entitled to the property back, but it still has to be collected. The fact is, it's not in her rishus right now. Yes, she's entitled to it back, but it's not in her rishus, and therefore you can't. Therefore, there can be, as the Gemara is going to say now, there can be certain overriding things that make it impossible to return it to her rishus now. Therefore, rishus ekai, it still stands in his rishus until she actually goes and sues him in Beis Din or whatever and collects it. It's still, the fact is, it is in his rishus, and therefore he had certain rights over it to the extent where it's possible for it to become also to her. You'll never shibboard, exactly. So yeah. Rava l'taimei. So Rava goes according to his own reasoning. The Amar Rava, we had this a couple of weeks ago. Hektish chometz v'shichro maskin midei shibboard. That if you have, for example, something, if I have, for example, an animal or an object or whatever that I made an apusiki for you, I borrowed money from you, I designated this particular animal or what have you is an apusiki, you're going to be entitled when you're going to be entitled to collect your debt by taking this animal. Then I go and I makdish this animal. That takes away your shibud on it. You don't have a shibud on it anymore because hektish overrides that. Yeah, hektish is chal. Even though there's a shibud, yeah. That's hektish. Chometz is suppose, for example, you have that a goy lends. We had this case in Sochim at some length. A goy lends a Jew money, and the Jew owns some chometz and he uses it as collateral for the loan. He uses it as an apusiki. Once Pesach comes, that chometz is also b'hana, and there's no more shibud on it. Which Rashi explains that, similar to what we're saying over here, that it has to be, it would have to be actually that it remains in the Jew's house. That the goy, the same thing, mechusu guvaina, the goy has not collected it yet, the goy has not actually picked it up yet, therefore the Jew still has some ownership over it. That's how it's able to become also. If the goy had in fact brought it over to the goy's house, hinei etzle, it's called in the Gemara there, then attacker wouldn't be also b'hana. Yeah. That's chometz. V'shichrur, same idea, is I made my slave an apusiki, then I freed him, then the apusiki, the shibud, and it goes away. Mafkin midei shibud, all these things take away from shibud. So by the same logic over here, this business of using a tachrichim for a mess is one of those kinds of things. It's somewhat similar to hektish. Actually, the Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses the issue of how we know tachrichim are also b'hana, and I think, if I remember correctly, the Gemara draws an analogy between it and hektish. So therefore, yes, even though, yes, it belongs to her, it only belongs to her to the extent that she has a shibud on it. Yes, she's entitled to the object itself, unless there's something that can override the shibud, like one of these things. No, if somebody just grabs it, that doesn't override anything. We're saying Dafka these kinds of things. These kinds of things. We're talking about even though you have a shibud on it, but it's still in my possession. So I have the right to do certain things with it. I may not be able to sell it unilaterally because that we said before the husband will have the right to take it away. But
that of comes and says, okay, I'm taking it.
No, of course not. You can't have a third party. No, you can't.
My possession now.
No. We're not talking about that kind of thing. We're talking about that I myself, the owner, the original owner of the object, or not even the original owner necessarily. In the case of the husband and the Nichset Sein Bowser we're talking about over here, the husband's not the original owner, but he's the effective owner right now. It's under his control.
He
got it legitimately. It was brought into the marriage as part of the Natan. Amar Rav Yehuda, hechnisa lo shnei kelim. What happens if the woman brings two kelim into the marriage, as Nichset Sein Bowser? The elef zuz. The two kelim together were worth 1,000 zuz, 500 apiece. Now they appreciated in value. Now altogether they're worth 2,000. So echad netlasa b'ksubasa. So one of them she can take to pay off her ksuba because she was owed 1,000 for the tzayin barzel. V'echad, and the other one, if she wants it, netenes damim netlasa. She is allowed to. She has the right to tell her husband, her ex-husband, whatever. I want to give you money and I want to take this keli back. For the same reason, because the shvach for her and her family, that this keli should remain in the family. So the husband doesn't have the right, even about that second one, to say, no, you know what, you got the first one, that's it, go away, I'm entitled to the second one. No, she has the right to buy him out. Question, so what's the chiddush? That because the shvach is sevia, therefore we consider that she has a certain ownership of it? Rav Yehuda already said that. What's he repeating himself? The answer is mau detei mahani milehecha dematyal mishko b'ksubasa. You might have thought the difference is that in the case that we were talking about before, the Nichset Sein Bowser, before we were assuming that they kept the same value. So yes, she's entitled to get X amount from her ksuba, from her Nichset Sein Bowser. All of these things that she brought in are still worth that X amount. Sure, she should be entitled to them. But you might think that doesn't necessarily mean that something that where her ksuba has already been paid off, and now she wants to buy something else, which originally she brought in, but now has appreciated in value. You might think not necessarily is shvach be'sabia a strong enough reason to give her that right. Kamash malon. That's why Rabbi Yehuda is saying that it is. So the bottom line being, in other words, that whatever she brings in as Nichset Sein Bowser, she has the right to get back. And even if everything appreciated in value, so whatever it is that she gets back for free the things up to the value that was written into the ksuba, anything else she has the right to pay for and get it back. The husband doesn't have the right to say, I want to keep these things. Any of the Mishnah. Really, today was supposed to be Samach Zayin, so we'll see how far we can get. Now, we mentioned yesterday when we started the Perek, and we talked briefly before, that we said a Bat Yisrael marries a Kohen, she's allowed to eat Truma. If her husband dies, she's not allowed to. She has to stop eating Truma. However, if she has children from him or descendants from him, then she is allowed to continue eating Truma because of them, because she's the mother or grandmother or whatever it is of a Kohen, therefore she's allowed to eat Truma on that basis. So our Mishnah is going to talk about what if she's pregnant. Bat Yisrael shenisses the Kohen umes. Bat Yisrael was married to a Kohen. The Kohen died. V'hinichamu beres, and she's pregnant. Now, when we say she's pregnant, it doesn't necessarily mean this is their first child. It can mean they have previous children also, which, if she weren't pregnant, there'd be no question she'd be able to eat truma because of them. The problem is over here, as the Gemara is going to say, because she's pregnant, that baby in her stomach is able to passel her from eating truma, but not able to. He has, on the face of it, we're going to discuss in the Gemara, he has a certain part ownership or a certain potential part ownership of the property, including of the avodim, and therefore, he does not have the power. An unborn baby does not have the power to make his avodim be able to eat truma. So therefore, his mother is going to be stuck. Lo yechlo avodim, but that doesn't matter. The point is the uber. That's what we're going to say. We're going to say in a second the rule about it. So lo yechlu avadeh b'truma. So her slaves are not allowed to eat truma. Mipnei chelka shel uber, because this unborn baby has potential share in them. and he does not have the right to make the meat truma. Shor uber poisel v'enemachil. The unborn baby passes his mother from eating truma, but and he does not make it possible for anybody to eat truma. What does that mean? So Rashi says it's talking about two different cases. Uber poisel means if a bas koyin marries Yisrael and she's pregnant and has no other children because she's pregnant from a Yisrael, even though the baby hasn't been born yet, that already passes her from going back to truma de bein nasha, from eating truma from her father's household. That's how uber poisel. The einim machnu would mean if it was the other way around. She's a bas Yisrael. She's married to a koyin. Now her husband died. She's pregnant. She's carrying a baby who's a koyin. Nevertheless, because the baby hasn't been born yet, she cannot eat because of him. Yes, she's feeding him, of course, but nevertheless, because he's not born yet, he's not called Yilid Beso, is the expression of the pasuk. He's not Yilid yet, he's not born.
So in one case, you apply it during the pregnancy, and in the other case, you don't.
Yeah, basically, you're machmir in either direction, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Not even.
Yeah, but that's how it is. That's how it is. Tosfos explains posel veinim achil a little differently. That it means that he passels the avodim, as we said in our Mishnah, and his mother was not able to eat because of him. Whatever it is, that rule everybody agrees to. Divrei Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Yosi says we apply that in this case, and therefore we say that the avodim are not able to eat truma because she's pregnant. Amrulai. So the Chacham said to him, in that case, if you're telling us Eidos that that's the din when a Bas Yisrael marries a Kohen, that you're saying because she's a Bas Yisrael, when her husband died, that she became Oster Ti Truma, and you're saying you can't be mocked to her on the basis of her baby until the baby is born, well then Ach Bas Kohen L'Kohen Umes. So the same thing would be if she was a Bas Kohen and she was married to a Kohen and he died, and he left her pregnant. Also, you should argue, you should have the same argument, that her slaves are, he has a partial ownership of the slave, and therefore, since a fetus cannot be machil, therefore they shouldn't be able to eat. And yet, you're only talking about a Bas Yisrael. Why? But that's just it. The Chacham are pointing out to Rabbi Yossi on the face of it, okay, not her, but we're saying her slaves. The baby has part ownership of the slave. The unborn baby has a potential part ownership of the slave. And yet, you seem to be saying that in that case, it's fine for them to eat truma because she's able to eat truma, because she's allowed to eat truma from her father, from Devei Nasha. But what's the difference? The Chacham are arguing. Either way, if you're saying that he cannot make it possible for the slaves to eat truma, then that should be the same thing, whether his mother is a Bas Yisrael and herself is not allowed to eat truma at that point, or whether she's a Bas Kayan and is. So, now we have to figure out why Rabbi Yossi holds what he does. Ibayalu. So now they had a question. Is it that Rabbi Yossi holds that the baby, as long as he's in the womb of a Zara, of a Bas Yisrael, himself is considered a Zar? In other words, even though he is a Kayan, of course, his father's a Kayan, when he's born he'll be a Kayan, but as long as he's unborn, we consider him as if he was a Zar, therefore he passes his mother from eating. Or maybe is it that Rabbi Yossi holds only a baby who's been born makes it possible for somebody else, his mother or his slaves to eat truma, but not before he's born? Question is, mine after me. No, okay, what's the practical difference? The difference would be if she's a Bas Kohen. You can't say, if you say that as long as he's not born, he's considered a czar, you can't say that, Mela, if his mother was a Bas Yisrael, fine. You can say, Uber Yerachima, who the baby is considered part of his mother. So fine, he'd still be considered a Yisrael until he's born, and then all of a sudden he becomes a Kohen. If his mother's a Bas Kohen, and he's considered part of her, he'd be a Kohen already at that point. So you couldn't say it's a matter of czarus. But you could say... Yeah, because his mother is a Bas Kohen. So however you look at it, whether you look at it, even if you look at it that the baby is part of his mother, and Uber Yerachim Ayu, nevertheless, he's not a czar. His mother is a Kohenet, so that would make him a Kohen before he's born. But if we say that it's a matter of whether he's born or not, because the pasuk says you live there, so then it would still be a difference. It doesn't matter Bas Kohen or Bas Yisrael. So what is the reason, Taka? So it's a machlokes. Rabba says the reason is, in fact, because Rabbi Yossi holds that as long as the baby is unborn, he's a czar, which would mean, in other words, that therefore if the mother is a Bas Kohen, it wouldn't be an issue. Rabbi Yosef Amar Yolod Machil Shein Yolod Ein Machil. Whereas Rabbi Yosef says it's a matter of whether the baby has been born or not. Even if his mother is a Bas Kohen, the fact that he hasn't been born temporarily passes his mother and the slaves from eating truma. Meisvei, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction against Rabbi Yosef's understanding. The Braisa continues, our Mishnah had said, Omru Loyal Rabbi Yosef, Me'acha She Adzalon al Bas Yisrael Lekoyen Bas Koyen Lekoyen Ma'u. You told us that what happens if a Bas Yisrael Ma'u is a Koyen. You're saying because she's pregnant, she's also to eat until the baby is born, and therefore the slaves are also to eat also. What about a Bas Koyen Lekoyen? What about if she herself is a Bas Koyen? Why don't you say it differently? Why don't you say the same thing, rather? Amalahem, he says the difference is, Zu Shamaiti, Vizuloi Shamaiti. Because I only heard from my Rebbeim about the one case of a Bas Yisrael, I did not hear my Rebbeim say anything different, say that the same rule would apply to a Bas Koyen. Now, what's the point? If you say that there's a difference, that you say that when the mother is a Zara, he's considered a Zara, and if the mother is a Bas Koyen, he's considered a Koyen, then it's logical for him to say, I can see there's a logical difference to distinguish between them. My teacher has only told me that a Bas Yisrael, that the child's considered a Zara. They didn't say that there would be any problem with a Bas Koyen, presumably because the child's not a Zara. And therefore, it would be logical for him to draw that distinction. So when the Chachamim are telling him in the Mishnah and in the Braisa, why don't you say the same thing, whether it's a Bas Yisrael or a Bas Koyen, he could easily say there's a big difference. One's a Zohar, one's not. But if you say that it's a difference of whether the baby is born or not, that as long as the baby is not born, nobody's allowed to eat truma on his behalf. What do you mean, I heard in one case, I didn't hear in the other? It's exactly the same case. There's no reason to distinguish between a Bas Koyen or a Bas Yisrael. Yeah, it's Kasha. Okay, Akasha. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Zudiri Rav Yosi. This that we so far we've been discussing is what Rav Yosi holds, that when the mother is pregnant, then automatically that if the Bas Yisrael, automatically it passes her from eating truma until the baby is born, and it also passes the Avadim from eating truma. But the Chacham said there's a difference. Yeshle banim oichel mishum banim. If the husband and wife had other children, then the slaves are still allowed to continue eating because of those other children. Those other children, each one owns a share of the slaves. They're allowed to eat from other kainim. So therefore, so are their slaves. And even if they didn't have any children, the slaves are able to continue eating truma because who's going to inherit him in that case? His brothers. The Torah describes the basic mechanism is that a person's sons inherit him. No sons and no descendants of sons and daughters. No sons or daughters and his brothers. No brothers and sisters. No brothers or sisters. Then you go up a generation to his uncles, then his aunts, and so forth. You keep on recursively going up generation by generation. So no matter what, there's always going to be some kohen who's going to be yarshining this person. It was going to be yarshing this person's estate, including the slaves. Yeah. So therefore, they continue eating on that basis. So if he doesn't have brothers, they can continue eating because the whole family, because somebody from the extended family, going all the way back to Aaron HaKohen, if you have to, is going to inherit him. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel had used the expression Zu Divrei Rabbi Yosi. The question is, when he says "Zu Divrei Rabbi Yosi," this is the words of Rabbi Yosi. Usually, that's an Amora's way of saying this is what Rabbi Yosi says. I don't agree with it. That's the question. Zu v'lo svirulei ha? Zu v'lo svirulei? Are you telling me that he's saying this is what Rabbi Yosi holds, but by implication, I don't agree with it? Ha amalei Shmuel Rav Chana Bagadta, but we find that Shmuel told Rav Chana Bagadta. What's Bagadta mean? Rashi gives two possibilities. One is that Bagadta is short for Baal Agada. A Talmud Chacham, an Amora, who was expert in Agadah. Or Rashi's second explanation is that means he came from Baghdad. Anyway, Baghdad in Iraq, yeah. No, anyway, he tells him, Puk, go out, Icily Beyasara, go bring in 10 people over here. I want to make an announcement. I want to make a public announcement that everybody should know. The Emalach Ba'antai, I want to tell you in their presence, Hamazakil Uber Kona. If somebody wants to be mizake, if somebody wants to grant something to an unborn baby, then the baby is kainah. So what's the point then? So Rabbi Yosi is saying in the Mishnah and in the Braisa that the slaves have to stop eating truma because this Uber, who at this point we're considering a czar, has a part ownership in them. And you're telling me it sounds like Shmuel doesn't agree, but we see Shmuel does agree. An unborn baby is able to own things. Okay, so you have to answer, Ella Zuva Spirley. So, okay, you have to say that he means Zu Divir Rabbi Yaisi, that this is what Rabbi Yaisi says, and in fact, I do agree with him. In that case, the question is, my Kamash Shmuel? So then what's Shmuel come to tell us? Depligu Rabbanan, Allah did Rabbi Yaisi. Shmuel wants to inform us that the Rabbanan would disagree with Rabbi Yaisi, not only about the case of our Mishnah, that's obvious, but even about that case, I'm a Zakah, but Uber Kana, that Shmuel said that he wanted to make that public announcement, he's saying Rabbi Yaisi would agree to that, but the Chachamim would not. Question is, Rabbi Pligi, do they in fact argue? Must have Rabbi Zakeh, but Rabbi Zakeh says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Zu Edus Heid Rabbi Yaisi Mepi Shmai Vavtalion Vahoidu Loi. Rabbi Yaisi said this Edus in the name of Shmai Vavtalion, and they agreed to him. They, meaning the other Chachamim. So it sounds like they agreed. It sounds like they conceded to him. So our Mishnah mentions Divir Rabbi Yaisi, and they argued with him, why is there a difference between a Bas Yisrael and a Bas Koyin? But it sounds like in the end, he said, you know what, this is the Kabbalah I have from Shmai Vavtalion, and they said, okay, in that case, and then that's that. The answer is Amar Abashi, Mi Katani V'Kiblu? No, because the Braisa doesn't say they accepted it. V'Hoidu Lo Katani. They agreed with him. D'Mistaber Taimi. They agreed. He's saying a logical thing. But nevertheless, they said, you know what? You have a Kabbalah from Shmai V'Avtai in that way? Very nice. We have an opposite Kabbalah from our Rebbeim. And therefore, they didn't have to concede to him that the halacha is like him, and therefore Shmuel can indeed be informed. They accepted. He has a logical point, but they didn't agree with it. And therefore, Shmuel, when Shmuel is saying his din, he's saying a dafka according to Rabbi Yaisi.
Here's